Welcome to KPTZ's Nature Now, a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of kptz.org.
Hello, this is Mary Robson with Charlie Fleischman. Welcome to Nature Now for the last week in April. The trees have opened full leaves this week. Have you noticed how green everything is? And they're fed by a few days of weekend rain, which was pretty much of a deluge. But first, the mystery sound. And now, some observations.
Pinnipeds, California sea lions hauled out, resting on the large buoy just past Point Hudson last Friday. They were curled around it like very big dogs. Sea lions here are all male. The females stay in breeding areas south, including the California Channel Islands. The males can move long distances for fish hunting. They can climb rocks and buoys because their hind flippers are mobile.
And birds. We'll be talking about this more with Christy Lassen from Birds Unlimited, but from the very large, namely a sea lion that can weigh up to a ton, to very small, an orange-crowned warbler has come to my hummingbird feeders. It perches on the fence edge and sips. So if you see a small, bright yellow bird at your hummingbird feeder, it may very well be a warbler. This is no good news to anybody but rabbits. I found one hopping across a field, stopping for dandelion greens. This was a very round, large rabbit, looking as if it was likely to become more rabbits pretty soon. The tail wasn't visible, but this one resembled an imported cottontail with rumpled brown fur. Nobody needs reminding how pesty rabbits can be. But in England, a superstition is, first thing on the first day of the month, you say, rabbits, rabbits. Good fortune will come. You can try this on May 1st. I never get it straight because I say something else before I say rabbits, rabbits. But when you awake on May 1st, try that. We don't have any scientific proof that this actually works, but there are people all over saying rabbits, rabbits. Today we're talking with Christy Lassen about migratory birds. This is the time when they're coming and going, and a lot of what's coming is things that we just cannot imagine, how beautiful and interesting they are. And Christy works with Birds Unlimited, and she knows her birds inside and out, so she's going to help us wing along. And before we start that, Christy and I both had an announcement about our last show that included word about monarchs.
Several weeks ago, Mary and I were talking about planting milkweed to support monarch butterflies. One of our attentive listeners, a gentleman named Al, wrote in with a reminder to do not scatter exotic seeds, which can invade forests and fields. Stick with the native species that grows in Washington. And I can never pronounce this quite correctly. It's you may have to help me with that.
Well, I make it up as I go along.
Okay.
The native species as Clepalus speciosa. So we are going to start and talk about bird news regarding migration. And I thought one of the places to start is that a lot of people are aware that the railroad bridge is open again, right near the Audubon Society over the Dungeness River. They have revegetated. And I thought what was so interesting was that the volunteers chose to plant some native plants that looked to me as if birds would like them. So what are some of what they're putting in?
They're putting in flowering red currants, red elderberries, blue elderberries, mock orange, and Natuka rose. There's Oregon grape out there and Pacific ninebark, service berries, thimbleberries, twinberries, all great plants for birds, yep, to bring in our native bird species.
That's a wonderful atmosphere, too. So when you are walking across the railroad bridge and on the Olympic Discovery Trail, look for the new plants and the birds that have migrated in. One of the things we have on our list today is how migratory birds are legally protected in the U.S. This year is an anniversary.
It's the 100th anniversary of the Migratory Bird Act. The Migratory Bird Act is one of the oldest wildlife protection laws around, and basically it protects birds from humans.
That's pretty comprehensive.
Yeah. The Migratory Bird Act provides that it is unlawful to pursue, hunt, take, capture, kill, possess, sell, purchase, barter, import, export, or transport any migratory bird or any part, nest, or egg, or any such bird unless authorized under permit issued by the Secretary of the Interior.
So some people who are students can get permits to
study for research,
right?
There's definitely things that you can do for research. There's special ones for our Native American population to use in rituals and things like that. Their religious ceremonies.
What I was thinking about was I wondered what inaugurated this. What was it in 1916 that made Congress ready to pass the Migratory Bird Act? Do you have any idea?
From what I've read and understand is that it was pretty much the white egrets, that their population was almost completely wiped out because of the fashion industry to use their feathers for hats, for women's hats. And they realized that they were going to kill off this entire population if they were continued to allow the hat makers to collect the feathers. So they put laws in place to protect those birds.
That's amazing. And it's the surprising thing to me is that it has become so comprehensive. The law was negotiated with Canada. It includes Mexico, Japan, Russia. I have no idea how the enforcement is working in any of those places, but here in the U.S. it seems to be having some help. And this is partly because in the Pacific Northwest, we are part of the Pacific Flyway. You were going to discuss that because it's really something to imagine. It's amazing.
It's a huge migratory path for migrating birds. It extends from Mexico all the way up to Alaska in the United States and then even into Russia for certain types of birds.
Is it only on the essentially on the West Coast?
Just the Pacific Flyway.
Just the Pacific. Okay.
There's definitely other flyways through other parts of the United States, migratory paths, but that's the Pacific Flyway is our main one.
Okay. It's comprehensive in the sense that practically anything that's migrating here is going to come up that flyway one way or another, right?
Definitely.
So specifically, there are some birds that come in for summer, and they make our summer. Can you help us get a sense of what arrives?
My standard for, there's a couple that are like standard, it's going to be summer. Our summer residents are showing up. The goldfinch, American goldfinch are definitely one. Our swallows are always a great sign that spring is here and we're going to have violet green swallows and tree swallows nesting, the barn swallows too. Mm-hmm. Those are my big ones. Rufous hummingbirds, too. They're one of the earliest ones who show up as migratory birds.
They have been to Mexico, right?
Yes, yes.
We have Anna's that apparently has decided to forget the suitcase and stay here. But the Rufus go and come.
Some of the Anna's do definitely migrate, too. But I think every year it seems like a little bit of a larger population of Anna's stick around each winter. Evening grosbeaks are a great migratory bird, too. They're so beautiful, and they sing so loudly. It's quite fun to listen to them. Our purple finches are migratory. Some of the warblers, and then the bluebirds, too. Mountain and western bluebirds are migratory birds.
There seems to be a question about how the population of bluebirds is surviving or what's going on. I read somewhere that birds like the sparrow and the starling are nesting in places where the bluebird would normally nest, in a cavity in a tree. So I don't know whether that's accurate about bluebirds here. I haven't seen any, so I'm blank on whether they're where they are and what they're doing.
The majority of the western bluebirds that are out here tend to like to nest in higher alpine meadows, so we don't see them too much. We see them in transition every now and then. I know Fort Worden had some migratory mountain bluebirds just like a week or two ago.
Oh, that's so
neat.
There
was a couple of sightings of them. And so we see them more in transition. There are some high alpine meadows where they do tend to nest. There's a family in Cary Blake Park who have cultivated a family of western bluebirds. They feed thousands and thousands and thousands of mealworms every year to get the bluebirds to come in. And there is a population that's nesting out there in Cary Blake Park.
Cary Blake Park is in Squim, right?
Yep.
Just so people know.
And so there are some there.
Boy, thousands of mealworms is quite a commitment to keeping them going.
That's a lot of worms.
I might nest if someone offered me a mealworm, but I've just never eaten one, so I have no idea. Is there any thought about why so many of the summer birds are so colorful, especially the males? I know we haven't talked about this, but
well, it's mating. It's totally related to mating.
Okay.
That's their main way to attract a mate. Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting, you know, in areas where food is a lot more plentiful, tropical areas where birds have access to lots and lots mm-hmm. of fruit, their main thing that they focus then on is not providing food for a mate. It's colorful decoration. That's why parrots are just outrageously colored, and the birds of paradise are just bananas in their displays, because there's so much abundance of food that that's not how they
that's
say,
not what you
can
offer
for
right
you. I'm fantastically gorgeous and you want to be with me,
but goldfinches, there are, I think, as you said, just absolutely beautiful for summer. I have seen them kind of coming and going. They're so brilliant, it seems to me that they would be easy to spot if you were a predator, but I'm just giving them all kinds of hope that, no, nothing is going to grab them that's not supposed to. We have swallows, and one of the things that I was thinking about summer and swallows is swallows are insect eaters.
Yes.
And one of the reasons why we continually counsel people to avoid using pesticides is that, at least half of these summer birds need insects, even
Definitely.
Hummingbirds, which they need them for protein.
Hummingbirds are insectivores, so are the swallows. They're all pretty much on-the-wing bug eaters as well. We need those bug populations for these birds to survive. Loss of habitat definitely affects them. I'm not 100% sure, but I think that the violet-green swallows are still on the species of concern list
Okay. For
Washington State. I can't be 100% sure, quoted, without Googling it, but there's definitely issues with that. The bug populations, the more bugs there are, the more mm-hmm. birds there are, and the more birds there are, the more bug control, natural bug control we have.
Exactly.
It's a wonderful balance when it's all working the right way.
I think, for instance, of aphids, which I've always thought of an aphid as sort of a little protein-packed bento box for a bird. People get all tangled up and worried about aphids. They are there to be scooped up and
kinglets.
Munched.
Oh, the kinglets love aphids. They are
okay. Big
aphid eaters.
So Yep. Hopefully, if somebody is growing roses and concerned about aphids, just consider that they are part of the motion of things, and they actually help the hummingbirds too.
So. Definitely.
And the other thing is that some insects, such as, I think ladybugs, lady beetles, also eat the aphids.
Yep.
So what we've got there is a kind of a grocery store that people can't see because their things are too small to be seen. So thank heaven for the insects. So what else do we want to comment about on migration? Because what I'm thinking about is we see the bird arrive, but it may have come thousands of miles. And that continues to astonish me. No matter how often I think about it, I think that bird, for instance, Swainson's thrush, may go all the way to Peru.
They're one of my favorites, too.
They are.
I adore that song. That song, to me, is the herald of spring.
It is.
It's so beautiful.
I haven't heard it yet, but we'll be talking a little more about them as we go along. So we also have something coming up, which is International Migratory Bird Day. Because they're crossing national boundaries, this is an international kind of a celebration. It might be year-round, but most of the time there is a traditional date, the second Saturday in May, to celebrate International Migratory Bird Day. And what else do we need to know about that? It's kind of wonderful.
I love the whole idea of citizen scientists helping out the organizations that are working to track bird populations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can't be everywhere all the time. So if we can get people to look in their backyards and report what they're seeing with the bird populations, you can get a really wonderful map of what's happening to our bird populations.
You can report it through Cornell, too.
Yes.
There's an eBird site, I think, on the Cornell site. What I'm thinking about, too, is that if we started thinking about this the way people think about the Christmas bird count, the traditional date in the middle of May, we would be standing in our gardens and going, there's that goldfinch, and then you'd have somewhere to report it.
Definitely.
So yes. That's really fine. This is celebrating migration of, they said, nearly 350 species of migratory birds from North America all the way down to Latin America, Mexico, the Caribbean. It is still astonishing that birds are able to manage this. So we talked a little bit about the threats to the migratory birds. We've got the Pacific flyway, which is established and used, and what is getting in the way of successful migration?
There's lots of hazards that they have to overcome. There's a lot of dangers out there for them. Power lines, severe weather, glass buildings, outdoor cats, things like that. But I think the one thing that impacts them the most, and definitely I feel like in our state as well, is the loss of habitat for them. It's interesting. You can actually watch the Rufous hummingbird migration. There's a few websites that track these birds.
Oh.
And you can see their migratory path. And over the years, their paths have changed. They're utilizing more urban areas rather than wild areas. And it's not because they're addicted to hummingbird nectar or, you know, our feeders or anything right. like that. But it's because it's the loss of wildflower blooms.
Uh-huh.
Those natural resources are going away from them.
One of the things that they do love is the native currant here.
Definitely.
That's the key
element to their migration.
Keep planting them, right?
Definitely keep planting them. Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife has on their website that every year in the state of Washington, 35,000 acres of our wild habitat is converted into residential or commercial development. So that's a lot of habitat loss every year just in our state.
It sure is. So in a decade, or even 5 years, that's a lot of loss.
It's a huge space. Having things in your backyard to sort of help them out is really great. The Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife has the Backyard Wildlife Sanctuary Program.
Oh, yes. That's been on for a long time.
Definitely.
It's wonderful.
It's a great program to check out and see how you can help birds in your very own backyard.
It would be something fun to do with children and grandchildren, just to say, hi, we're going to figure out how to become a Backyard Wildlife
Definitely.
Sanctuary and then do it.
Yep. And so, you can get a little plaque through the state, which is fun to put up in your backyard,
we
too.
We like those little plaques.
Yeah.
Okay. So, gosh, we've gotten to the end of our time practically. I just wanted to close by saying, do you have a favorite summer bird? I think you indicated at the beginning that there are some that really...
Definitely the Swainson's thrush. They're my favorite. That sound of that echoey call through the woods in the early morning and in the evening is just, it's perfection to me.
Okay, so there we are. We're on to perfection. And those of you who've been listening to the mystery sound are going to be quite surprised to find that you've just heard us talk about it. So thank you, Christy.
You're welcome.
This has really been fun. It always is. And I'm happy that there's legalities and personal interests that can help these migratory birds. So thanks very, very much.
Thank you, Mary.
Thanks to Christy Lassen for bringing us some wings. And now for the mystery sound. Swainson's thrush. I did not prompt Christy to mention this bird because it is what makes the sound of summer evenings at dusk for me. Swainson's thrushes are difficult to see, but they are wonderful to hear. They perform a rising tone with no resolution. It resembles a musical question. The bird repeats this again and again as the sky turns darker, and you'll hear it again in the morning. Swainson's thrush is a very shy brown bird, smaller than a robin. It gathers strength during the summer to migrate to breeding places in Mexico and all the way down to Peru. This is another mystery and miracle of nature. And finally, one event. There's more coming in May. The Matt Albright Native Plant Center, which is between Squim and Port Angeles, sends greetings to everybody interested in the Elwha Revegetation Project. They have a nursery volunteer drop-in time, Mondays and Wednesdays, between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. There's more information on the Native Plant Society website. It really sounds like fun. They're doing a lot of transplanting and a lot of gathering seeds, and they need your help. That's it for KPTZ's Nature Now for the last week in April. Thanks very much to Charlie. And this program will be rebroadcast at 5 p.m. on Thursday, 11:30 on Saturday. And it's available as a podcast in a week or so at kptz.org. As always, happy trails.
Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman.
Today's closing music is Migrating Bird by Stella Marnalaki.
ήμουν γρήγορο στο δρόμο.